Hey, Better Days family. Welcome to Better Days Podcast Season 9. This season of the Better Days Podcast, we're going to talk about different aspects of mental health and suffering. Throughout these episodes, we're going to lay a theological framework for each topic, flesh out misunderstandings that we sometimes hold, and offer practical advice and tips to help you along in your journey through mental health and suffering. We're going to be joined by various friends that I'm so glad are sharing their expertise and advice on these important and valuable conversations. If you're new to Better Days, we're a nonprofit seeking to bring hope, awareness, and education to all things mental health and suffering. We help churches, people, and leaders understand the intersection between mental health and suffering and following Jesus. For more content from Better Days or to support our work, check out our website, betterdaysfmly.co. Let's jump into this week's episode. Better Days Podcast, welcome to Season 9. I'm Wesley Towne, founder of Better Days, and I'm here with two of my close friends and contributors to Better Days, all things Better Days, but particularly our podcast. Mm-hmm. Jason Kane, pastor, double masters, master's in theology, master's in clinical mental health counseling. Did I get that right?
I think that's right.
That's right. And then Dr. Stephanie Kane, therapist and also professor of counseling and psychology. Tell us about the work that you do.
Yeah, really enjoy the work that I do. I work with adults primarily in my private practice and experiencing all kinds of mental health issues, and I specialize in trauma.
And during Season 9, first of all, these two will be with us for all of Season 9. I'd like to flesh out some misunderstandings that Christians have often around mental health and suffering and the intersection between those subjects and following Jesus. We're going to enter into episode 1 today talking about how do we flourish in our mental health. I think there's two sides of mental health. One side of mental health is cultivating our mental health, and that's the flourishing side. That's a side that we often don't focus on because so many people are suffering. Mm-hmm. We have challenges with our mental health, that's side two. And oftentimes we're focused on what are those challenges? How do we walk through those challenges? How do we understand the challenges of mental health? But it's interesting that the first two chapters of the book of Genesis, God lays out the question, what does it mean to be human? And essentially, undergirding the question, what does it mean to be human, is all of the facets of life that God created so that we can flourish. How do we flourish? How do we flourish in the Garden of Eden? We know that we don't exist in that sphere of perfection where there's no sin, no pain, no suffering, no grief, no loss. But how do we take those aspects that God created for human flourishing in all of our lives and begin to intentionally cultivate that as followers of Jesus? So basically, as I studied the first two chapters of the book of Genesis, I found 7 aspects of what it means to be human and flourish as a follower of Jesus, or just a human being created by God. And here are the 7 aspects. We were created in the image of God, which is baseline foundational layer of what it means to be human. In Genesis 1, 26 and 27, God says, "Let us make man, male and female, in our image, according to our likeness." Secondly, we are created with a body and a soul. Those are 2 aspects of being human that are so vital to understand so that we can flourish. That's in Genesis chapter 2, verse 7. We'll talk a little bit about that as we flesh these out. Fourth, we were created to be relational with one another, to have human relationships. Without human relationships, as we know in our current cultural context with so much loneliness, you can't flourish.
Right.
Fifth, we are created to have a relationship with God, which is the foundation of everything else in thriving and flourishing as a human. Sixth, we were created to work. That's in Genesis 1 and 2. We're created to have purpose, to engage, to cultivate and produce good in this world. And then finally, we were created to rest. We were created not just to produce and have output, but we were created to celebrate and reflect and have input in our life as well. So I thought in episode 1, we could take each of those facets of human flourishing and flesh them out and have a conversation about them. I think the first one is so important, that each of us, every human that has ever lived, is created in the image and likeness of God. And a lot of us would say, well, what does it mean to be created in the image of God? What does it mean to have the imago Deo in each one of us? It means that you and I are created like God, but we're not God.
Right.
We reflect the nature of God. We represent God. So there's a part of this that is purpose-oriented, and there's a part of this that is character-oriented. We have been created like God, but we're not God. But I think understanding the nature of God is so important to understanding what it means to be created in the image of God. If God is love, we have this deep yearning to love and be loved. If God has authority and influence, a lot of us want to have influence in this world, but if we want to have influence, we want to have influence like God to do good. Mm-hmm. If God is just, then we long for justice, so on and so forth. And I think you could go down all the layers of the character, the nature, the perfections of God, and you realize all of that in partial ways, because we're not completely God, right? All of that in partial ways is a part of all human beings. We are created in the image of God. And that also means that we have immense value and purpose. Every single one of us, because we have the fingerprints of God all over us, as his design was to create us in this way, we have immense value and purpose. So I'd love to have a discussion about this. When you think about the image of God in the context of human flourishing, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think with so many people kind of floundering around in life, trying to figure out what they're supposed to do, one of the things that they can do is look to Scripture and look to God and figure out the things that God does and how do we best emulate those things. One of our goals as a Christian is to be like Jesus. And I think the more we know about Jesus, the more we can behave and be like him. And so knowing that we have the image of God stamped on our hearts, our efforts or our pursuits in life should be to do what the things that Jesus did, to bring life, to bring his kingdom to earth. And when you do that, when you have purpose and meaning, it helps with your mental health. I think it's foundational to making sure that your mental health is strong. What I love about this particular episode is we're doing what Frederick Douglass talked about. He said, it's easier to build strong children than it is to repair broken men. And what he's saying in that is he's making the point that if we are able to look at mental health as something that we proactively pursue, then when we have the moments in life where we can have difficulty and trial, when we have to do repair, it's a lot easier when we have a foundation to stand on. And I believe knowing that we are made in the image of God is a great foundation to stand on as we try to flourish in life and have strong mental health.
I think in those moments when we struggle in our mental health, it's when we're hit with the reality of our limitations. It's that gap between we are inspired by God, we are stamped by God, but we are not God. Mm. And at that moment, it becomes distressing when we realize we don't necessarily have the capacity to hold all of the things that happen in life, all of the complications and complex issues that come up. And at that time, we start realizing our limits. But this is when we have the opportunity to flourish in recognizing that God has given us a roadmap, like what you said earlier. It gives us this guide of what we can do, what we can lean on in order to help carry us through that part where God, in his wisdom, it's like, I know that you guys are going to struggle and it's really going to knock you off your feet when you realize you're not me. But I've given you the tools you need to get you through those moments, and I've given you each other in that.
That's such a helpful observation around the image of God, because when you think about the image of God, we often don't think of limitations. Mm-hmm. But limitations is built in, because think about the nature of God. God is all powerful. We're not.
Right.
We have power, but we're not all powerful. God is all knowing. He knows all things, mm-hmm. but we only have limited knowledge. Mm-hmm. So I think the limitation aspect is so valuable to understand. And secondly, something you said, Jason, I think the identity piece, mm-hmm. like becoming like Jesus. We have a crisis on so many levels of identity. People are asking themselves, who am I? That is a question for our time. Who am I? And I think when you realize I am someone that is created in the image of likeness of God, it gives you a road to travel down. It gives you a puzzle to put together, so to speak, where you realize that my life now is lived into becoming like Jesus. I have limitations. I'm not fully like Jesus, right? But I'm becoming like Jesus, a person of love, a person of kindness, a person of goodness, a person of positive influence. So I think that identity piece is really, really important. Mm-hmm. Second, I really appreciate thinking about this, and I know you guys are going to have incredible insight. You and I and all human beings are created with a body and a soul. But let's start with a body. In Genesis 2, verse 7, God creates the first human out of the dust of the ground. And I think that's representational of the physical, material aspect of being human. And our bodies are really, really important when it comes to flourishing in our mental health, but also just flourishing as a follower of Jesus. I think for so long in Christianity, there was such a focus on your soul, like just pray and, you know, read your Bible. And this is the most important things to be a follower of Jesus. You want to flourish. But what about the stewardship of the physical, material part of being human? This is essential for spiritual, mental, emotional, and relational flourishing. Stephanie, what are your thoughts when you think about the body and aspects of human flourishing?
When I hear about that, I get goosebumps because I've seen it in the own work that I've done over the years in mental health. It's been transformational in the healing journey that people go through when they recognize how their body is responding to them in different situations. The body is an alert system. It lets you know when something is wrong physically, but also when there's something wrong emotionally, and when something is right. Mm. When there's peace and calmness there to let you know, hey, you're doing this the right way. It's astounding how oftentimes we're so distracted by busyness that we block out what our bodies are trying to show us. And so in the work that I do, I spend a lot of time with people helping them have a relationship with their bodies to be more aware of what does it mean when I have a heaviness in my chest? What does it mean when I start feeling my hands are getting fidgety or my legs are shaking? Oftentimes these things could be happening and we don't even realize that it's happening. But when we attune to that and we become aware of how our bodies are communicating with us, then at that point, it gives us a lot of information about the meaning that we're making out of the situations that we're in. Oh, I'm feeling a heaviness in my chest. That means I'm starting to feel really angry. Oh, okay. What am I angry about? It's a way to be more curious internally and more self-reflective about what's happening rather than just operating, responding to our environments.
Mm, so valuable.
Yeah. As Steph said, it's much of an alert system. Recently, I've realized how much of a connection there is between the body and the brain, or your physical and your mental. And I have some friends that were going through a stressful time, and the husband developed a rash because of what he was experiencing, and doctors couldn't figure out why. And then he had this stressful situation in his life that kind of went away. And immediately when it went away, the rash went away as well. And so the body definitely alerts us to what's happening on a mental scale. And I think paying attention to what is happening in our body, paying attention to our gut, like there's a big tie between how your gut feels and anxiety as well. Mm-hmm. And paying attention to those things and asking yourself, okay, what is my body telling me will help you to flourish, because you'll know I might need to make some changes physically in order to strengthen my mental health.
Yeah, so an awareness of right. what's going on in our body.
Yeah.
And the communication cues that we need to start picking up on and becoming intelligent about in our own body that can help us understand what's happening inside of us. And I think this is so important because we're going to talk about the soul as well, but these are interconnected. Mm-hmm. Like no part of us, God didn't create us as segmented. He created right. us as integrated. Mm-hmm. So you have all these facets of what it means to be human. And there is complexity in it, right? It takes a lifetime to become aware of how to flourish or to understand the cues and the communication that's going on inside of us, whether that's soul or body. But I think another aspect, so awareness is so important. Another aspect is, I think in the Genesis story, there's three core tenets of stewardship of our body. One is movement. God places Adam and Eve in the garden and he puts them to work. Mm-hmm. They're moving, they're engaging. Moving our body is so important. All of this neuroscience is coming out around you know, exercise, movement, and we all exercise, and this is important for our own stewardship. Jason, you're exercising like 5-6 days a week now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a new thing for me.
Yeah, tell us what you do.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm turning 40 this year, and there's nothing like
the
turning
40
to make you realize,
welcome.
I need to make some changes in my life. And talking to my friend who is a personal trainer and asking him, like, what do I need to do? He's like, man, every day you need to move your body. And you don't have to do anything, you know, outlandish. You don't have to do CrossFit. You don't have to run a marathon. You just need to move your body for 30 minutes a day. So, you know, recently joined a gym, have my son that engages in it with me. And there are multiple benefits that I've seen to just moving your body on a daily basis. And making those small changes has definitely had an effect on my mental health. You feel better about yourself. I'm a golfer. I enjoy golfing rather than riding in a cart. I walk. And just these small changes I've seen, you know, benefits to my mental health already, but also in addition to my physical health as well.
It's been astounding to me to see how people are able to move emotions around the body. The more work that I do in mental health, the more that I am in awe of God's design and just how even in designing our bodies, the psychological implications of our body's responses. Emotions show up in our bodies and we can actually have movements. Our bodies are actually telling us how to move those emotions out. For example, I work with clients who are struggling with anxiety. Anxiety is gripping them. They notice it showing up on their legs. Their legs are fidgeting. We do some sort of deep meditative mindfulness technique in session that has them focusing on their legs, scanning their body. And what they notice is that their body's telling them to do something, stand up and stretch. They get up and they do that movement and all of a sudden the anxiety is released from their body. That is the Lord's design of saying, I have given you everything you need to help you to move emotions in and out of your bodies. Emotions will show up and you're not necessarily choosing them, but your body can help you to move them out. But you have to have a healthy relationship with your body. You have to take good care of your body. When you are disconnected from your body, when you're poisoning your body, maybe you're turning to things that numb you out, substances or activities that numb you out, then you have a disconnection with your body and you're not able to notice these healing strategies that can help you to just deal with whatever difficult situation you're in.
That's so valuable to understand. I think getting below the surface of understanding the human body is so important. Movement, gut-brain connection. So I think movement is really important. And I'm a naturally anxious person. I've struggled with anxiety for as long as I can remember. And working out 4 or 5 days a week, I do CrossFit, I run, has been life-changing for me. Mm-hmm. With my anxiety. And what you said is so valuable. Sometimes when we move, we're able to move those emotions through, like you're processing them,
yep.
And then get to the other side where we feel well again. Mm-hmm. So I think movement is so important. I think secondly, God created us for movement, but also to eat. Mm-hmm. He put them in the garden full of nutrients, and plants. Mm-hmm. I'm a vegan, so I'm just preparing for eternity when we're going to eat lots of plants again.
If we only get steak here, I want to get as much of it as I can.
So there's nutrients in the garden, and that was a part of their flourishing in their body. Mm-hmm. What we eat, the gut-brain connection that you mentioned, is such a huge conversation around mental health. The food that we put in our body plays an influential role in the neurochemical communication in our brain and what takes place in our brain. Mood, it can alter our mood. It mm-hmm. obviously affects us as human beings mm-hmm. on so many levels, but mm-hmm. it can affect how we feel on a day-to-day basis, which then can, you know, can turn into feeling downcast or depression mm-hmm. or what have you. So I think food is really important. And I know you did some research study in this as well, so I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, just how food, the nutrients from food can contribute to the brain health. And even starting your day out with higher protein, higher greens. Starting your day out nutritiously actually helps regulate your mood and your capacity to handle stress throughout the day versus starting your morning with a sugary substance. Even a cereal, you may think, oh, I'm having granola, but that could be packed with sugar. That ends up causing your blood sugar level to rise. It impacts your mood. You end up starting to lose energy a lot sooner. It's harder for you to focus. So you can make decisions. And I think what happens is a lot of times things happen and you feel you've lost control and it's like it's hard to make decisions, but there are actual little decisions starting with movement. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to grab peanut butter and an apple this morning instead of a Pop-Tart or something. Doing that can actually make a huge impact on your day. So you can start out making small, significant decisions that will carry you through the day. I do feel like, I feel a burdening. I don't know how this fits into this, but in recognizing that everyone does not have the luxury and the privilege of being able to access nutritious food.
Great point.
I don't necessarily have a solution for that, but I just feel like it's important to acknowledge that everyone is not able to just go and get organic food, which is highly expensive, or has the space to grow a garden or things like that. And so I just kind of just want to say to those people that I'm sorry that we live in a world where you may have the will and the desire to pursue these types of strategies, but it's hard to actually access those resources to do that.
Yeah. And another element, also acknowledging some people listening, to have a healthy relationship with food. Sometimes we have an unhealthy relationship with food. And I think understanding that food is there to cause us to flourish, to provide nutrients to our body. Would you just talk about for a second, what would you say to somebody that's listening that says, oh, I know this is important, but I've had a long-term unhealthy relationship with food in my body?
Yeah, there's been people use various coping strategies for surviving. And some of those coping strategies don't serve us well, but they feel in the moment like they do. So control, a desire to have control in your life. Food is a way that some people have used for the purpose of control, whether it is denying themselves food by way of not having enough nutrients, really restricting themselves in what they're putting into their bodies, or leaning into anything that they can fill their bodies in to fill an emptiness that they're feeling psychologically. And so I think the first thing is always going back to self-awareness, being aware of why am I eating this way? Why are these my eating habits? How are they serving me? And are they serving me in a beneficial way, or are they actually hurting me in the long term? Maybe they get me through the moment, but long term, they're actually causing more problems for me. And then getting help for that. That's not something that's always easy to do on your own. And thankfully, there's a lot of people out there who are trained in that area. There's a lot of great reading material in that area to help guide you in replacing that with some healthy coping mechanisms. And there's some strategies to start building a healthier relationship with food. It's a process over time. It's not an overnight thing. It starts with a mindset change, and it's difficult. It is so hard to do because it's a coping strategy. It's a survival. So when you eliminate, whether it's healthy for you or not, a survival mechanism for you, it can take you place into a further distress. So I just want to acknowledge that. I recognize how hard that can be and that it's a long-term process for people, but taking these small steps towards building a healthier relationship with food is so essential.
Yeah. And then on a friendship level, like I'm trying to be an influencer in Jason's life. And I try to get him to juice vegetables with a juicer at home. And tell us about that experience.
The problem is the cleaning the juicer is worse than just drinking the soda.
That was a lot.
Yeah, the cleaning the juicer is a whole lot. But I do, you know, the thing about working out is I'm like, I'm not going to waste my workout by eating a Snickers after. I'm not going to waste my workout by eating unhealthy. So if I go work out, it helps me eat just in a more healthy way. I still can't put away candy. I'll eat a handful of...
You can put away candy.
No, I eat a handful of sour candy right before I go to bed.
And he goes to bed chewing candy.
Vivid dreams.
With It's like a sugar high.
The best dreams you will ever have in your life.
You can fall asleep.
I'm no nutritionist.
After a handful of candy.
I'm no nutritionist, but
hey. At 4 a.m. for like an hour, or like he's got disturbed sleep.
That's not disturbed sleep.
So, Dr. Kane, this is what not to do.
Do not
do
that.
Not to do. Hey, but you can do it. And somehow it works for you.
We'll show you our dental bill till you what happens with that.
Hey, my dental bill has been great since I moved here.
I juice, but I'm trying to get this guy to juice.
Please do.
Vegetables.
We need to do it.
It's just the cleaning, man.
But he doesn't
so
like the
vegetables.
Cleaning. So one day he's like, hey, it take me 10 minutes to clean my juicer. So I said, okay, I'm going to juice right now, and I'm going to time myself how long it takes me to clean my juicer. So I'm done juicing. I turn on the timer. It took me like 74 seconds to clean my juicer.
Well, you have a $3,000 juicer.
I screenshotted that and sent it to
him.
We need your juicer.
No, it was only like $159. Yeah, I've had it for like 8-10 years. Yeah. So body, we're getting through a number of these. So you have movement, which is really important. You have food. And then I think the third part that God created in the Garden of Eden is sleep.
Yeah. Mm.
It's a daily Sabbath.
Yeah.
Like we sleep, some people, like we grew up in the hustle culture. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, work, 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 accomplish, do, you know, climb up the ladder. And what happened with the hustle culture is they didn't sleep. We all got burnt out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like burnout sweeping across our nation and Western culture because of the hustle culture. And then we're on the other side of that. We realize, oh, sleep is really important.
Yeah. Sleep is repair for the body, essentially. Me and you were talking about a podcast we listened to. I think LeBron was on there or something about how much he sleeps. What was the
it
number?
It was like 12 hours a day.
Something like 12 hours a day, which is incredible that anybody
like
can sleep that
40
amount.
Right. Scoring 25 points a game
right,
in the
exactly.
NBA.
Exactly. Yeah. So he there's something to sleep. But sleep is significant. As you mentioned, it's a daily Sabbath. It's an opportunity literally for your brain and your body to do repair. And the older I get, the more significant sleep gets in my life. And you want to develop healthy sleep patterns. You might be trying to figure out, man, why am I so cranky or why am I so anxious? And it may be a direct tie right back to your sleep. So begin to observe, like, how many hours of sleep am I getting a night? There are great books on sleep. I think Arianna Huffington has a book about sleep. There's a lot of neuroscientists that have books about the importance of sleep and how it can significantly improve performance in life if you're able to get an adequate amount of sleep. Now, many people have insomnia or may deal with some other sleep issues, but in a general way, if you are able to do things to make sure you get that 6 to 8 hours of sleep a night, man, it's a superpower to be able to sleep well.
I think the updated stats are 7 to 9.
Yeah.
So attack on another hour.
Yeah, yeah.
And don't feel guilty about it. Like, we all, us three, we are self-motivated, driven people. And I've noticed with self-motivated, driven people, they feel like they're being lazy if they take 7 to 9 hours of sleep.
Well, the thing is, sometimes I think a lack of sleep, or some people just aren't tired. But you want to work yourself hard enough in a day where you're so tired, you have to go to sleep, right? And so I think hard work can help lead to better sleep because you're exhausted. And don't see sleep as, you know, a bad thing or I'm being lazy. Like, it's necessary. I take a nap almost every day from 5 to 6
Let's
o'clock.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Five to six nap.
I'm refreshed and then I'm back in bed by 9:30. And I don't, you know, I just think sleep is a blessing, but I'm up early as well.
Yeah.
He followed our toddlers. When we had toddlers, their sleep schedule, they grew out of it, but he kept it up.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so good. Is there a time that people should go to bed? Circadian rhythm, all that stuff.
It's a matter of the duration of sleep that you have because people operate in different schedules.
Yeah.
So they're not always going to fit that time. Now, impact, when I talk about circadian rhythm, I'm talking about the internal system in the body that helps your body know it's time to go to sleep. And there are a lot of people who struggle with sleeping. While sleeping is absolutely critical, it's often the thing that suffers the most. I would venture to say that everybody wills to go to sleep and have a deep sleep throughout the night, but many people don't experience that. And so when I'm talking about the circadian rhythm, which is your system that allows you to sleep, one way that impacts that is to spend time in the sun when the sun is out. Mm. It's critical because it actually sets your circadian rhythm system to know, oh, it's daytime. I need to be alert. And then when the darkness comes, the body goes, something has changed. It's coming through your eyes like, oh, it's dark now. Now it's time for me to time out. So that's why it's so critical to get outside. I work a lot from home. I work a lot inside. So I can understand how the day can get away from you and you didn't get to go outside and take a walk. But really, really make it a point to get outside and sit in the sun at least 30 minutes, during the day when you can, and get that vitamin D, get that into your system.
Yeah. And so if you're Scandinavian, wear sunscreen. Like,
yeah,
me,
please wear
30 minutes in the sun, I'll be red.
Sleep is also, I think, sleep deprivation, it feels like torture. So there are probably parents out there who aren't sleeping right now.
Yes.
And that's just a season that you're in, right? If you have small children, it's going to be hard for you to get the adequate amount of sleep. And it's almost like you're paying the dues of life. But no, it does get better as your kids get older and you are able to get back to a rhythm of sleep that's healthy. But when you have small children, it's not really much that you can do.
Yeah.
And that's where it can impact relationships like your marriage and other relationships, because you're sleep deprived and you're not a very nice person to be around.
Yeah.
You're not thinking clearly, you're irritable, you're disrespectful. And I think it's giving each other grace and recognizing that we are sleep deprived and we are not our true selves.
Yeah. And asking yourself this question, am I really angry or am I just tired?
Yeah.
That's great.
That's a great question to ask yourself, like, why am I so grumpy right now? Oh, I'm sleepy. When you have a lack of sleep, it affects your mood in ways that you can't even imagine. But asking yourself that question can save you on some arguments and can help your relationships flourish as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So we need sleep to flourish.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
conversely, without sleep, you're going to feel that in every part of your life.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Yes.
The negative effects of lack of sleep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So image of God, body, soul. And this is a big one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so in that passage in Genesis, God creates human beings from the dust of the ground, representational material part of us. And then he breathes into the first human, the breath of life. And it says, the man became a living being. He had a soul, a nephesh. And I think when we think of soul, first of all, soul is a term that a lot of people don't understand. And let me just simplify with an explanation of what a soul is. It is the immaterial part of you. It's all the parts of you that you can't see. It's your thoughts, your emotions, your capacity to worship and acknowledge God. It's your capacity to have relationships. It's all of these internal, unseen, immaterial parts of you that deeply influence your life. So when you think about your soul, we have to tend to our body, but we also have to tend to our soul. We have to say, I have to become emotionally healthy, I have to become mentally healthy, and I have to become relationally healthy, because all of these aspects of life, mind, emotions, even decision-making, habits, and relationships find their core reality inside the human soul.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to tend to our soul. We have to water our soul. We have to take care of our soul if we want all of those aspects to be healthy as well. And one of the things that I think we often don't understand, you know, you've been sitting down with people, helping them navigate through complex parts of life for a long time, and I've been doing the same, and you've been doing the same. And oftentimes people don't understand that what they do to their body affects their soul.
Yes.
And what is happening inside your soul affects your body.
Mm-hmm.
There's this interconnection, interplay between the body and soul that are really important to understand. So when we talk about body, don't just think that what you do to your body to intentionally cultivate it isn't going to have an effect on your soul, because mm-hmm. it will. And don't think that some of the hurt and pain that you've dealt with in your life isn't going to have an effect on your body. It does. These are communicating with one another. We're not two separate parts. We're an embodied soul. We're embodied beings, and we have a soul. And so talk to us. Like, when you think about the most influential aspects of being human, the soul, and cultivating those, what are some of the thoughts that come to mind?
Yeah, I would say, you know, as you're talking about having a soul, I think that is how we worship, right? It's what has my affections, my attention, what is my mind most thinking about? And hopefully, as Jesus said, we love the Lord with all our heart, mind, and soul. Is it heart, mind, and soul? Am I tripping?
Yeah,
right now?
Strength.
Strength, there we go. But our soul is what we want to, is the part of us, I think, that has this deep connection with God. And you want to have a healthy soul, and I think you have a healthy soul by doing several things. Making sure that your worship and attention and affection is on God. Making sure that you, how you live your life is pleasing to God. You want your soul to be healthy, and Jesus is the one that helps that happen.
I think the evidence that you're feeding your soul comes out in your the way that you love and in your wisdom and discernment. You'll find that the more time you spend feeding your soul by way of worshiping, being in your word, being self-reflective, not self-critical, but self-reflective in noticing what are the things that I'm doing, what are the activities or habits I'm participating in that are either hurting my soul or feeding my soul. When we do that, the outpouring of that, what we start experiencing is that we become more discerning. We make better decisions. We give better guidance to people. People actually, there's this, not just the immaterial strength of that draws people. They may not know what it is, but you'll find that more people will start wanting your insight and feel some level of draw to you, this magnetism, because of there's something there in you. They may not be able to convey what it is. And so they start seeking you for more information, which strengthens relationships, which is ultimately what God wants us to do. He designs us to be there for each other too. And so you see his wisdom and saying, hey, I'm giving you this soul. The soul is going to make you wiser. It's going to help you take care of yourself, and it's going to help you take care of people. People are going to notice that in you, and they're going to come to you. And then you all will become a stronger community. And you can ultimately, you'll have the credibility to lead them to the kingdom of God. It's incredible, the connection of all that.
So practical and insightful. And I think as we're talking about human flourishing, there's a lot of layers to each one of these facets. And I just think this conversation is so valuable. Thank you for joining us today. We would love for you to help in spreading the word about Better Days Podcast so that we can bring hope and help to people navigating mental health challenges or suffering of any kind. We would love if you let a friend know who may be walking through a hard moment, or you can also share on your social channels. We appreciate every person's support. You can find more resources at betterdaysfmly.co. Join us for another episode next week. There are better days ahead.